We'll call the House Tax Committee to order. When we have a quorum, we'll break in and do some administrative deals. It'd be my intention at that point to move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape I would like. What we'll do is we'll have a overview from House staff at this point regarding the DE1 amendment, even though technically it's not before us. That's what we'll be working off of today. And again, whenever we have a quorum, we'll interrupt and officially call the meeting to order and move the DE1 amendment to House File 2337. This is the omnibus tax bill for the year, members, and we're going to be somewhat we're going to have to watch our time closely. We do have to be over the floor at noon, so we will adjourn today at 11:45 p.m. or a.m. Excuse me. Oh, p.m. We got a ways to go here. We'll get her done today. There'll be no votes today on amendments or other than to get the DE1 amendment before us. So with that, if we could have House Research go over the DE1 amendment. And if we could allow various sections to go to be described to us, and then we can break it up for some questions, and then we'll go on at that point. So we really want to get the overview in on a timely basis here so we can start moving forward. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, I'll start it off. Steve Hines from House Research. And I'll start with Article 1, the property tax article. Section 1 is a reduction in the state general levy for both commercial, industrial, and seasonal recreational property. Both levies are frozen at the Pay 12 level for Pay 2013. And additionally, then $55 million is taken off of the CI portion of the levy to eliminate shifting from Section 2. And if you look ahead to Section 2, Section 2 provides that the CI tax on the first $150,000 of each commercial industrial property is reduced by 70% of its current level. So it's a 70% reduction on the first tier, and in Section 1 there's a reduction in state general levy so that there's no shift as a result of this reduction.
Excuse me, Mr. Hines, we have a quorum. We'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. I will Representative Crawford moves the minutes of March 12th. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, all appear say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I would now move the DE1 amendments so we have what's being described. I will move House File 2337. I will now move the H2337 DE1 amendment just to get it in the shape that we would like to work off. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. We now have House File 2337 as amended before us. And I think, members, what we'll do, rather than breaking it up in sections, I think we should have the whole bill described, and then we'll open it up for questions from members. Okay, Mr. Hines, if you could please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the third part of Section 1, or the third significant piece, then it provides also for a phase-out of the state general levy for both commercial, industrial, and seasonal recreational property over 12 years, beginning with Pay 14. Section 2 is the section that actually does the 70% exclusion for the first $150,000 of CI from the state general levy. And Section 3 is pretty much now just the technical section that eliminates the 95-5 split, because now each levy is on its own sort of course. And I think I'll turn it over to Nina for the PTR discussion.
Nina Manzi from the House Research Department.
Ms. Manzi.
Sections 4 through 9 relate to the renter property tax refund. This is the same proposal that was in the committee engrossment of House File 1914, so it may be familiar to you from a few weeks ago. The first thing that it does is to reduce the percentage of rent considered to be property taxes from 17% to 15%. And that change is made in Section 4, and then there's a corresponding change for manufactured homes in Section 5. The next thing that it does is to provide separate property tax refund schedules for senior and disabled renters and for non-senior and non-disabled renters. The schedule for senior and disabled renters is set forth in Section 6, and that retains the same schedule as in current law for those with incomes up to $26,010, then for those with incomes from $26,010 up to $40,000, it provides lower maximum refunds than in current law. The other parameters of the schedule for those in that $26,010 to $40,000 income range, so the threshold percentage and the copayment percentage, those are the same as in current law. And then it makes those with incomes over $40,000 ineligible for the refund. Under current law, people are eligible when their incomes go up to about $53,500. So it's sort of a three-step change. The lower income renters who are senior and disabled are kept the same as in current law. Those from about $26,000 to $40,000 have reduced maximum refunds allowed than in current law. And then those over $40,000 of income are made ineligible. Section 7 sets forth the new schedule for non-senior and non-disabled renters. This schedule is less generous than the schedule for senior and disabled renters. Under this schedule, the maximum refund eligible will drop to $25,000, and the maximum refund allowed will drop from $1,550 to $1,000. In both cases, the new refund schedules would be effective for claims based on rent paid in 2011. So there's a section at the end of this article that instructs the Commissioner of Revenue to recalculate the refunds and to put a communication in with the reduced refund amount to people who have already filed their claims, saying that the reduction was due to actions of the 2012 legislature. Sections 8 and 9 are conforming changes. Section 8 eliminates the inflation adjustment for the new renter PTR schedules while retaining the inflation adjustment for the homeowner property tax refund schedule. And Section 9 makes a conforming change to the open and standing appropriation for the renter property tax refund schedule to make sure that there are appropriations for both of the new schedules, since there's a new subdivision going in and that new subdivision has to be referenced in the appropriation.
Mr. Hines?
Sections 10 and 11 go together, and those provide for elimination of interest on the for the senior deferral program. So currently, when seniors participating in the program, they get deferred taxes. There's right now interest charged to them on the deferred tax amount, and this eliminates that interest, so there'll be interest-free deferral.
Ms. Dalton?
Pat Dalton, House Research. Sections 12 and 15 are Representative McElfatrick's bill as it relates to the city of Tamarack, allowing them an additional $12,000 of aid for 2 years for pay 12 and for pay 13. And sections 13 and 14 relate to LGA for pay 2013. Basically, it freezes everybody's LGA for 2013 at their 2012 levels, with the exception of Tamarack, which gets its extra $12,000. So the appropriation for LGA, which was scheduled to go up by $1.2 million in pay 13, that increase is delayed till pay 14.
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman, Section 16 provides for an increase, a one-time increase in the special tax property tax refund programming, also called targeting, for taxes payable in 2012. It increases the percentage, provides that the state will pay 90% of any increase over 12%. Under current law, they pay 60%. So it's it's an increase for just 1 year only. And again, this is kind of retroactive in that those forms are already out there. So this provides that the Department of Revenue would recalculate the refund using this higher refund amount. And then Section 17 that Ms. Manzi alluded to earlier is just an administration section that provides for the commissioner to recompute the refunds for that are filed in 2012 because forms are already out there.
Michael? Mr. Chairman, Joel Michael from House Research. I'll go through Article 2. Which it contains changes to the individual income tax and the corporate franchise tax. Sections 1 through 4 relate to the Angel credit and are from Representative Downey's bill. The only thing I'll point out, the one difference from Representative Downey's bill is in Section 3, and the summary is wrong on this. So Representative Downey's bill increased the annual limit under the Angel credit to $20 million, and that's what the summary says because it was copied from Representative Downey's bill, but the actual amendment, the chair's amendment, raises that to $17 million. So, and we'll fix that in the next version of the summary. But otherwise, this sections 1 through 4, Representative Downey's Angel credit bill, which makes changes in the definition of qualified small businesses and so forth. Section 5 is Representative Mazerall's bill, which allows essentially emerging biotech companies to sell net operating loss carryovers to other corporations. What I'll do is I'll go over there. I think there are 9 changes in Representative Mazerall's bill, and I'll just go over those changes since that bill was heard very recently. The first thing is the bill, as introduced and as heard by committee, applied to both technology companies and biotechnology companies. The amendment is limited to only biotechnology companies. Secondly, an additional requirement was added that at least one half of the company's employees have to be located in Minnesota. The third requirement is that to qualify, the company must have initially attracted at least $2.5 million of private investment, which could be in the form of equity or debt. The third change, if you'll recall, in Representative Mazerall's bill, it had a $60 million annual cap. That's been changed so that there's a varying dollar amount, which appears under the bullets. It's initially $15 million for fiscal years 2013 and 2014. Then it rises to $30 million in fiscal year 2014, and then it's $60 million after that. So it's 2 years of 15, 2 years of 30, and then 60. There's another change in the way the recapture is done. The original Mazerall bill required Deed to make administrative rules. This eliminates that and allows Deed to do it by establishing a contract form and requiring the participants to enter into that contractual agreement as opposed to establishing administrative rules for recapture. The seventh change is that there's a required study to evaluate the program with a report to the legislature by January of 2017. And then the final change in Representative Mazerall's bill is that the program is sunset at the end of fiscal year 2018. Sections 6, 7, 8, 9, and 12 relate to changes in the foreign operating corporation provisions. What these provisions do is to repeal the existing treatment for foreign operating corporations, which, for those of you who recall the way that works, foreign operating corporations are excluded from the unitary business and 80% of their income is allowed as a dividend received deduction to the corporation. That treatment is repealed and it's replaced by the new tax credit that appears in, let's see if I can find where the section is that actually has the actual tax credit in it. It's in Section 12 that provides a tax credit, and this tax credit is going to equal the lesser of the tax benefit that the corporation received under the old FOC treatment, and that's the calculation that appears in Clause 2 there, which is 7.84% of the FOC's income, or the amount of property tax they pay in Minnesota. So in effect, the way you can conceptually think about this is it sort of puts another limit on the benefit that you that a corporation can get from the FOC treatment, that essentially it has to have property tax, Minnesota property tax, at least equal to the benefit that they're driving from the FOC treatment. Section 10 is Representative Bill's bill that provided an income tax credit for employers who hire veterans that fall into certain categories. This is following the new federal credit changes that were enacted. It's and it essentially gives credit for hiring veterans who are receiving food stamps or disabled or have been disabled and were unemployed. And that bill, too, was heard fairly recently. Section 13 is the final provision that I'll go over, and that's an increase in the research and development credit. This is on the top tier. If you recall, there are two tiers to the R&D credit. There's a 10% tier for the first $2 million of qualifying research, and then there's a credit of 2.5% on the amount over that. This raises that percent from 2.5% to 4.5%. The rest of the provisions relate, you know, are all tied in with other things that I covered.
Ms. Dalton.
Article 3, the sales and use tax, sections 1 and 3 are the repealer of the accelerated sales tax remittance currently required for large vendors. These are going to blink off anyhow at the end of June because of the fact that we now have enough money in the budget surplus to refill the reserve fund. So this just eliminates all of those provisions. Section 2 is Representative Fabian's bill, the upfront exemption for capital equipment purchased by small businesses who are defined as 20 or fewer full-time employees or have in the preceding fiscal year had less than $1 million in annual gross receipts, gross revenues, or if they are a technical or professional service, have less than $2.5 million of gross revenues in the previous year.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Article 4 contains the miscellaneous provisions. Did you just say you wanted to do
them? No, you do them all.
Sections 1 and 7 go together, and they're the chair's bill on that was heard on reporting by liquor distributors, the information reporting on the annual report. That's unchanged. Section 2 is Representative Loon's bill, which I believe has been heard in Commerce and is scheduled to be heard in the committee but has not yet been heard. And what this bill, for those of you who are familiar with it, there's a credit for small brewers that if you essentially don't produce more than 100,000 barrels of beer, you get a credit equal to the excise tax that applies to the 25,000 barrels of strong beer. This would raise the threshold or the cap on how many barrels you could produce from 100,000 to 250,000. It doesn't increase the amount of the credit, but it just increases the number of brewers that can qualify for it. You can be a slightly larger brewer and still qualify for it. Section 3 is Representative Nornes's bill allowing gravel tax to be imposed in one city, Vergas, in Otter Tail County. Section 4 is a new provision that is not a separate bill that provides a $150,000 authorization for the Border City Enterprise Zone. This was a standard provision for at like 15 years or every other year, the legislature would authorize more funding for this program. The last time this was done was in 2008, so this would, you know, we skipped one cycle on this, and that would, those dollar amounts are allocated on a per capita basis among the five cities that qualify. Section 5 is Representative Mahoney's bill for St. Paul's Capital Improvement Bonding Program, except that it does not include the dollar increase in the authorized amount of bonding. Section 6 is a provision that was in House File 1914 that essentially cancels or transfers to the general fund $4.3 million that the Revenue Department has in a recovery fund for the administration of local sales tax. Section 8 is the provision that contains the purpose statements for the new tax expenditures that are in the bill. And Section 9 is Representative Loon's Tax Reform Commission as it was heard and amended by the committee. And that's the bill.
Okay. I think what we'll do before we go to questions, if we have some for house staff, we have people who have driven in from some distance. The Department of Revenue. So what we'll do is we'll go to Ms. Schill or Ms. Templin, probably both of them, if you could please join us. It'll be a very quiet presentation. As Ms. Schill was cheering for the Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament and lost her voice. So let's listen very, very carefully. How'd they do, by the way? We won't go into that. Okay. So with that, we'll go over. We have Ms. Schill and Ms. Templin from House Fiscal to go over the spreadsheets. And the spreadsheets should be in your packets somewhere. And they are. So who'd like to start? And then, members, I think what we'll do, since we're here anyways, I think we'll go into some testimony from folks that have come in to testify after we do the numbers, and then we'll want to make plenty of time for members' questions also. Who'd like to start? Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I will be going over the spreadsheet, or most of the spreadsheet, at the top labeled Tax Revenues. I'll be going over lines 1 through 7. And before I start, I should note that in this section of the spreadsheet, positive numbers reflect revenue gain and negative numbers reflect revenue reduction. Starting with line 1, this is a provision to replace the foreign operating corporation deduction with a tax credit. This is effective in tax year 2012. In fiscal 13, there's a revenue gain of $26.1 million. And for the 14 and 15 biennium, there's an estimated revenue gain of $43.6 million. Line 2, this is a provision to modify the R&D tax credit and increase the second tier from 2.5% to 4.5%. This provision is estimated to have a revenue reduction of $25.7 million in fiscal 13, and in the fiscal 14-15 biennium, an estimated revenue loss of $42.1 million. Line 3 of the spreadsheet comes from House File 2429. This is Representative Mazarol's bill. This is the technology transfer of the NOLs, and this is effective tax year 2012. There is a cap on this program of $15 million. An estimated revenue reduction of $15 million in fiscal 13 and $45 million in the 14-15 biennium. Mr. Michael mentioned earlier that the bill does specify that there is a cap on this program in fiscal 16 of $30 million, in fiscal 17 of $60 million, and also in fiscal 18 of $60 million. That doesn't show up on this spreadsheet, but that is language in the bill. Line 4 of the spreadsheet is the Angel Investment Tax Credit. There is an additional allocation to this tax credit of $5 million in fiscal 13 and $10 million in the fiscal 14-15 biennium. Line 5 of the spreadsheet is the Jobs Tax Credit for Qualified Veterans. This has a estimated revenue reduction of $1.3 million in fiscal 13 and $2.9 million in fiscal 14 and 15. I should note that the department just revised the estimate for this bill. This bill was heard in the middle of last week, and they found new data from the joint Joint Committee on Taxation specific to veterans, and the revenue estimate went down. Line 6 of this spreadsheet, moving on, is the small brewers credit where there's an increase in the threshold to qualify from 100,000 barrels to 250,000 barrels. This has an estimated revenue reduction of $390,000 in fiscal 13 and $790,000 in the fiscal 14-15 biennium. Line 7 of the spreadsheet is the elimination of the refund requirement for capital equipment specific to small businesses only. This has an estimated revenue reduction of $7.8 million in fiscal 13. And in fiscal 14 and 15 in the biennium, it's $7.7 million.
Mr. Chair, Kathy Schill.
Ms. Schill.
House Fiscal. This is the quiet part of the presentation.
And please proceed.
While I am a fan of the Ohio State Buckeyes, I did not lose my voice because of them. I wish that were the reason.
It'd be nice if you had something to cheer for there.
Mr. Chair, there's plenty of reason.
I'm more for Syracuse this year. I'm just putting it all on Syracuse. That's just the way it is. Ms. Schill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That was a bit harsh. I apologize.
And members. Continuing on the spreadsheet, line 8 are the changes for the statewide property tax. This is where we're excluding 70% of the first $150,000 in value and making sure that the shifts don't happen in the current program. The state levy decrease loss in revenue would be $40.3 million in fiscal 13 and a total of $316.4 million in fiscals 14 and 15. There is a separate line for the income corporate tax interactions. I would like to offer a correction that we received right before we came into committee. Fiscal 14 on your spreadsheet says $2.2 million, and that should be $2.17 million. And that will change then the overall impact. The overall impact for fiscal 14 will be a revenue loss of $115.17 million. And that will also change the overall tax revenue changes. And I will go through each line there as you see at the middle of the page. Total tax revenue changes will be for fiscal 13 a revenue loss of $69.39 million. For fiscal 14, it would be a revenue loss of $141.16 million. For fiscal 15, as it is stated on the page, a loss of $233.3 million. For a total in fiscal 14-15 of a revenue loss of $374.46 million. I will continue down the page with the impact of the changes in the DE amendment for property tax aids and credits. Now, this part of the page, positive numbers are increases to program spending. Negative numbers are cost savings. So line 1 of the bottom part of the page. The first item we have is reduced renter property tax refunds. The fiscal impact, and I take both the fiscal impact of the program changes plus the administrative costs that Department of Revenue will have to perform. The first year, there is an impact in fiscal 12, a cost of $11,000. In fiscal 13, there is a cost savings of $70.172 million. and fiscal 14 and 50 for the biennium, there's a cost savings of $158.7 million. Item 2, the modifications for local government aid, LGA. There are two components here. You'll see the first component for the pay 2013 freeze. There's a cost savings of $1.188 million in fiscal 14 for the out biennium. And then the modification for the city of Tamarack is a $12,000 cost in fiscal 13. Item 3, the changes to the targeting property tax refund. It's a one-year cost. Actually, this takes place in pay 2012, but the fiscal impact is in fiscal 13. That's $3.5 million. Item 4 is the senior deferral. Elimination of the interest accrual that takes place effective pay 13, so the impact is fiscal 14 and 15, a revenue law, or excuse me, a cost savings of $180,000 in fiscal 14 and $190,000 fiscal 15. I'm going to defer to Ms. Templin for the rest of this presentation.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you very much. Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. Page 2 of the spreadsheet, line 5, is the additional border city allocation. This is for affects fiscal year 13, and it is one time with no tails. Line 6 of the spreadsheet is kind of a placeholder for the tax reform study, commission study. We heard this bill in tax committee, and the date was amended for the report to be March 2013. Line 7 of the spreadsheet is the one-time transfer to the general fund from the special service and recovery fund, the local sales tax administration. This is savings to the general fund of $4.3 million in fiscal 12. And again, this is a one-time transfer. The total savings in fiscal 12 and 13 is $70.8 million. And in fiscal 14 and 15, it's $160.2 million. For total general fund net changes in fiscal 12 and 13 of $1.4 million, and in fiscal 14 and 15, a revenue reduction of $214.2 million. The rest of the spreadsheet is non-general fund transactions. If you'd like me to go through that, I can, Mr. Chair.
I think that's okay.
Okay.
On that,
okay.
I think members can take a look at that. Okay. Anything else, Ms. Templin?
One more thing, Mr. Chair. The line 1 of the spreadsheet, that is an estimate that we have from the department based on the November forecast. We are waiting for a February forecast estimate on that provision, so that number may change in the next few days.
Okay, Michelle.
Equally, Mr. Chair, there are a couple of revenue estimates that will be updated for the February forecast, most notably the renter's credit item and, I believe, the targeting PTR. We don't anticipate big changes in the numbers, but there will be modifications.
Ms. Schill or Ms. Templin, when do you expect those to come forward?
Mr. Chair, I am assuming within the day.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good. So as soon as we get that, we'll want to update members on how much those numbers have
Definitely.
Changed, if any.
Okay,
I think what we'll do now, and because we'll have House Research and House Staff here, I'd like to get into some testimony, and then we'll open it up for Representative Lencheski. Or
Mr. Chair, can they come back?
Absolutely.
We can ask questions about the spreadsheet.
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely. Well, actually, Michelle, Ms. Templin, why don't we bring you back here for a little bit before we start taking testimony? If there's some questions to the spreadsheet, and then just for a show of hands, how many people would wish to testify on behalf of House File 2337 as amended? Okay, keep going. We'll take more. How many people like to testify with concerns on the bill? Okay, so we'll take some testimony, and then we'll get into member questions and so forth. Questions for Ms. Templer, Ms. Schill, Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I just ask, will there be an opportunity for testimony on this bill tomorrow? I mean, unless I missed it, I don't think this bill was released till 11 o'clock last night. I don't know how the public would be able to testify for or against it by now.
Representative Lencheski, the answer is yes.
Okay, great. And thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a couple questions on the spreadsheet. One is, I was listening to Ms. Dalton talk about the sales and use tax provision in Article 3, and, you know, that this is, we can get rid of this now because of the budget situation. And if the K-12 bill passes that we heard last night, is that still true? Because I thought Representative Garofalo was using those reserves for his bill.
Well, Representative Lencheski, as you so eloquently said last night, it doesn't matter if it passes, it matters if it's signed into law. I was listening. And, of course, if it was signed into law, we would have to relook at those provisions because it would change those.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Lencheski.
And I guess on the actual spreadsheet then, I'd just like to request, before we're actually voting on this bill, an extended window spreadsheet. My observation is we're seeing through 14-15, so we're not nearly seeing the price tag of all the business tax cuts. We go out to 14-15, and there's $374 million that's being spent, and then that's being taken from the renters up to $160 million, but you're still left with a $214 million budget deficit not accounted for. And certainly, if I understand your bill right, Mr. Chair, that tax cut grows through 2026. So we'd see that price tag get significantly bigger, and I think the renters, you know, don't grow like that, so there's not going to be enough money to pay for that. There already isn't in the bill in front of us. So can we get a extended window spreadsheet? I mean, maybe the rest of the committee doesn't want it, but I'd like to see it down the road. And I also understand the Masrural bill grows in what it costs over time, and that's not on the spreadsheet either. I think the years that Mr. Michael clocked through on how the business subsidies grow, we're not seeing that. And the Brewer's credit, I think, is another one. So I think there's a number of pieces that we're not seeing the full spreadsheet. So if I at least could get that. But I did want to ask, on the spreadsheet, and maybe it's for Ms. Schill, I hate to ask you because you're having a hard time there, but the renter's credit, as I understand, you remove the inflation factor in that, Mr. Chair, but not for the homeowners, and how does that work on the spreadsheet?
Ms. Schill?
One moment, please.
Michelle.
By the advice of Ms. Mansi, it is one of the three things in the estimate, so it is there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. First Chair. So that's in there then. Okay, so thank you. And I guess just asking you then, Mr. Chair, and maybe you can't tell me, but do you have a target for this committee? Because if we have an alternative plan, we'd like to meet your target. And secondarily, clearly, you've been given the go-ahead to raise revenue. I mean, we'd call it raising revenue. I think some people call it raising taxes. Pick your poison here. But you're raising some taxes in here. You're raising revenue to pay for your bill, both in raising the burden on renters. And I haven't quite figured out what you're doing on the FOCs, but you're getting $26 million a year out of there in a new revenue raiser. Do you have a target can you tell us the number, and can you tell us, are you allowed, clearly you're allowed to raise revenue in your bill, is there a limit as to how much revenue you're supposed to raise to meet your target?
Well, Lencheski, yes, we are raising revenue, but then it's being offset by various other means here. So what you see in this bill right here is something that we can move forward with. So the numbers that we have here are good to go at this point.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess then, I guess for as we work through the bill then with the staff to understand it, if we meet the spreadsheet, you know, we're going to meet the targeting process through Ways and Means. Is that right? I mean,
I won't speak for Ways and Means, but as far as the tax committee goes, any amendments that you would have balance.
Right, thank you.
Representative Downey.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just listening to Representative Wincheski talk about the elimination of the statewide property tax as state spending. It occurred to me that maybe some of her other comments about the revenue raisers would actually better be referred to as spending cuts. So I think, Mr. Chair, you're cutting spending as compared to raising revenue.
Any other questions to House Fiscal at this point? And when I was referring to the Garofalo bill, if we need to make some changes down the road, I'm hoping the governor does sign that bill and be happy to work on changes when that bill is signed into law. Okay, any other questions for House Fiscal at this point? Ms. Schill, lemon juice and unsweetened iced tea is...
Lots of tea and honey.
Okay. And okay, I can't recommend that, however. Okay, so let's come down. Folks that would like to testify on behalf of House File... Well, let's go folks with concerns first. We want to hear what the concerns are first. Anyone would like to come down? And Representative Lincheski bring up a very good point, is that we will, if there's more folks who'd like to come in for or against House File 2337 as amended, we will certainly entertain comments tomorrow from folks that would like to testify, and some Thursday also. Who would like to express some concerns about the bill? Please come down. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project.
Madden, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll try to be brief. My comments are similar to ones that I've provided before this committee. We strongly oppose this bill's deep cuts to the renter's refund, property tax refund for renters, the renter's credit. We think that the cuts of this nature are not needed. They come on top of a $26 million cut in the 2011 omnibus tax bill. This is a nearly 40% cut on top of those. Close to one in four participating households would lose their entire renter's credit, and the average credit under this bill would be cut by $221. When you add that to what was passed last year, that's roughly $300 cut to these families who don't have very high incomes and are struggling to make ends meet. The bill before you includes a substantial restructuring of the property tax refund, particularly for those households that do not include seniors and disabled people. And I'd like to talk a little bit just about who those folks are. Information from the Department of Revenue shows that 41% of those households have at least one dependent, and close to a quarter have at least two dependents, and the majority of household incomes $30,000 and less. Yet this bill would cut their property tax refunds by an average of $265. So it's very clear who is paying for the other provisions in this bill this year, but what we don't know is how we'll pay for it next year and in future years as the cost of the other provisions grow. We are already facing a deficit of over $1 billion next year. We don't think we should add on to that another deficit of our own making. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madden, for your testimony. Questions to Ms. Madden? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Anyone else that has concerns at this point? Okay, anyone that would like to testify on behalf of House File 2337 as amended? Please, yeah. Mr. Hickey could come down, Mr. Hesse. Ms. Larson, would you come down also at this point? Is there anyone else at this point? Because after we have the testimony supporting the bill, we will go into questions from members on the bill. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, please.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I think we've covered most of this all before, so I'll be fairly brief. We do support the phase out of the statewide property tax business.
Mr. Hesse, if you're testifying on behalf of the bill supporting it, you have all the time you'd like.
Excellent, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
I don't have to be short or anything. Mr. Hesse.
Businesses in Minnesota still have relatively high business property taxes nationally, and again, the statewide property tax is the most direct way to provide relief, so we do appreciate that. We also have been supportive of the Angel Investment Credit over the years and are glad to see a little bump in the Angel Credit. The R&D credit expansion is also certainly a positive for Minnesota. We have a hub of R&D and technology companies here in the state, and expanding the R&D credit, especially on the top tier, will certainly make Minnesota more attractive to locate investments in R&D and technology in Minnesota. And then maybe two final comments. Elimination of the accelerated sales tax payments. That is, a significant item. Non-money item, but a significant item because it really has caused an administrative burden on retailers and businesses generally on how they remit the tax. And over the 2 years that it's been in place, it has certainly caused some confusion and penalties and so on. So we're glad to see, that can be eliminated. And then finally, the bill is making some progress on the upfront exemption on capital equipment. Again, another administrative burden that we often hear about, that it frustrates members when they have to pay the tax up front and then file for refund claims. So converting the refund program to an upfront exemption, even if it's just for small companies now, is certainly a step in the right direction. On the foreign operating corporation provisions, we're still evaluating the trade-off, and at this point, I think we're relatively neutral on that provision. But we'll be happy to work with the chair and members as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. I think we'll go to Mr. Hickey and then Ms. Larson, and then we'll go for questions. Mr. Hickey, please state your name. Who represent for the record, please, sir?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. We're the state's largest small business group and also the largest group in terms of entities with about 12,000 members and a significant member base in all your districts. I intended to make some brief comments, Mr. Chairman, if I can attempt to do a spontaneous filibuster here, if that would help.
That'd be fine.
No, just want to thank you. We've been in here many times on these issues. Just want to thank you for your strong support on some very important issues here for small business, the continued phase-out, continuing to propose and support the phase-out of the statewide commercial property tax. It's very helpful. It's a fixed cost that all businesses pay, as you know. And as Tom mentioned, we're still not competitive in where we want to get despite our 01 reforms. I think we are in the, if you look at the different studies on $1 million property, we range from about 8 to 12 or 13, depending. And so continue to make progress on that would be very helpful. It's going to be about a 22 to 30% reduction for businesses on average, depending on their situation. We also appreciate your huge reduction on the first $150,000 value. That's really going to be helpful to some of the very small rural businesses members we have, and that's also a added benefit we didn't see last year, and sure appreciate your support on that. We also support the provision on capital equipment, the upfront exemption. We've been trying to achieve that for years, and where you've drawn the lines is going to exempt the vast majority of small businesses at 20 employees and $1 million in revenues, and we really appreciate that. And finally, trying to simplify the accelerated sales tax is very appreciated. It's just a real pain to retailers, and we're making it worse as we go, and it's bad enough what we did in the beginning, so I appreciate that provision too. And just want to thank you for stepping up and having so many provisions here to help small business.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, Jill Larson with Minnesota Business Partnership. Add my support to the comments made earlier. We do support the freeze in the statewide property tax levy and the eventual phase out. As was mentioned, we did make some progress in 2001 on some business property tax reform when we were ranked number one in the country. But as Mike mentioned, we're still ranked relatively high. And Minnesota is relatively rare in that it imposes a state property tax on business property in addition to the local property taxes that our businesses pay and will continue to pay under this provision. So we strongly support the reduction in the state property tax. Also support and appreciate the increase in the R&D tax credit. We are a technology hub here. We want to remain that way. And so we appreciate the increase in the R&D tax credit. Again, at this point, we're neutral on the remaining provisions in the bill, including the exchange of the FOC structure for the tax credit. And look forward to working with you as the bill moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Representative Lunchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question for all three of you, or maybe it's we'll go to staff. Just trying to think through if anyone's done any analysis, any of you, on last year's tax bill raised business property taxes. I think it's very difficult for anyone to dispute that. And now all the data is out that the homestead credit elimination shifted a major tax increase onto business. So last year's bill gave you a property tax increase. This bill cuts it some. Have you not tried to ask yourself how much does this bill cut your business property taxes compared to current law, but compared to before the homestead credit was eliminated? Is there, have you done the analysis to see if you're actually just making up to where you were last year? Or, and I know over by 2026 you'd be fully phased out, but I'm just wondering if the CI property tax cut even matches the tax increase of last year.
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lunchesky, the impact of the tax bill last year obviously varies depending on the business, where they're located, what those local governments did in that jurisdiction, what kind of a business it was. And so why we appreciate this bill is because it is direct relief. It doesn't depend on what a local government does. It doesn't depend on what other kinds of property are in that jurisdiction. And so that's why we think this is the best way to go about providing tax relief to businesses. It's direct, it's clear, it's simple, and it doesn't rely on what a local government does or the various types of property in a jurisdiction. The property tax bills of our members are all over the map depending on where they are, how big they are, what kind of other properties in the jurisdiction. So this is direct relief.
Representative Lunchesky.
Well, maybe, Mr. Chair, if Mr. Hines could tell us, if the analysis is not yet done, I know we know exactly how much business taxes went up last year. $133 million, says Representative Marquardt. But, you know, we could get the nonpartisan people to tell us. Maybe it's tomorrow or the next day or whatever. It'd be interesting to see, you know, we know business taxes went up with the elimination of the homestead credit. Does this bill even get us back to where we were in 2010 for business property taxes? And it can be later.
Mr. Hines, you have an assignment for tomorrow. You get us some numbers for Representative Lunchesky.
Yes.
To that, Representative Donahue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if we could also get reports on the increase in local government spending at the over that same time period.
Mr. Hines?
I think that's good.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Marquardt, then Rukavina. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I, before I ask my question, I do want to come back to what Ms. Larson said, where it comes down to local government decisions. Now, this year, and I'm going to say this again, but this year, the total levy increase for schools, townships, cities, and counties was $78 million, less than 1%, which means everything else, if that was all that was, everything was in fair play and there was no other changes, the total property tax increases for this year would have been $78 million, less than 1% statewide. Instead, the actual number is $370 million because of the elimination of the homestead credit, $291 million. And so, you know, I think it's important, yes, local decisions have a big factor. State decisions, especially this year, had a much larger impact, 80% to 20%. So just to kind of put that out there, the question I had for the testifiers would be, how many of the businesses that you represent would present or approve of a business model that, looking into the next year, already has a $1.1 billion deficit, and now with a business plan would add another 20% to that deficit just into the next budget cycle, with it increasing
for the next 12 years. I'd like to know if there's any, if you know of any businesses that you represent from any of the testifiers that would approve of that type of a business plan and think that was prudent.
Mr. Hesse?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mark Bart, I think when businesses face tough times, they do a variety of things. They cut expenses and make sure that they're focusing the expenditures that they do make on priorities needed for the core of their business. And they also try to find ways to expand their markets, to increase, in this analogy, be to increase jobs. So, we look at the statewide property tax as and reducing the statewide property tax over time as a way to certainly retain jobs in Minnesota. Businesses are look at the property tax burdens they pay closely, and over time, if we take about 30% of the property tax off of businesses' backs by over time eliminating the statewide property tax, that certainly is a signal that Minnesota is a much more attractive place to operate a business. So I think a business would look at both sides of the ledger and try to figure out how we can concentrate on the core activities of that business and make some reductions on the spending side and then find ways to grow.
First, Mark.
Thank you. One other question I guess I have for the testifiers is that in this budget cycle, all of it is paid for by a cut in the renter's credit. And then moving forward, it stays the same but doesn't pay for all of it, of course. We know, and as Ms. Madden said, those folks who receive that tend to spend that money. In fact, I know a lot of those who have dependents, when that check comes in August, they go out and buy school supplies with those dollars. Are you concerned at all with the lowering of the purchasing power of renters, the fact that $70 million would be probably taken out of the economic stream, so to speak? Are you concerned at all with that? And not asking anything about quality of life that these folks are going to suffer by losing, but I'm just talking about the economic point. Is that a concern for anyone that there might be a lowering purchasing power out there by these same folks? And for any of the testifiers.
Anybody want to hit that? Or
no volunteers?
I guess not.
Representative Mark Hart, I'm just going to say that those are very legitimate concerns. Obviously, a lot of this is above our pay grade. We're here to advocate for the things that we feel we need to do to strengthen business in Minnesota, give us a better business climate, and hopefully bring revenue into the state, too. I mean, those are legitimate concerns, but I'm just commenting on specific aspects of the bill today, not looking at the big picture, not even very familiar with the total bill at the moment. So.
Thank you.
Representative Marquardt. Representative Rukavina.
Well, following up, Representative Marquardt, I was going to kind of ask the same question, and members, and I can understand why Ms. Larson and Mr. Hesse are supporting this bill, but frankly, I'm kind of puzzled that the NFIB, Mr. Hickey, would be supporting it for the very specific reason that Representative Marquardt talked about. I know the people. I go into the businesses that got your signs. I constantly try to tell them how much money you make. So you're not above your pay grade here, buddy. I know that for all three of you. But, you pluck $70 million this year and 76 or 77 next year, $82 million the following year out of people's pockets that go to your little Main Street businesses, Mr. Hickey. I don't understand why you're up there. I mean, they're spending it in your stores directly. These people don't have the kind of income that every... This is chump change to the business partnership and the Minnesota Chamber, but to you, these are real people coming into those little Main Street businesses, the Bobby Norris, and I can... You want me to go down the list, everybody that got your sign in their business up there? Because that's where the money gets spent. So I'm totally puzzled by it, but maybe you can respond to a little more direct question instead of the way Mr. Marquardt. I'm putting in range speak instead of Western Minnesota speak here.
Mr. Hickey?
Representative Rukavina, I understand your concerns, but Representative Davids has put several provisions in this bill that are very supportive for small business, and I understand you're concerned about that part of it, but we're as concerned about all the positives to the bill, and that's where we stand in support here today.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hickey, I can only say this.
Rukavina.
For the $100 that Bobby Norton is going to get back on his property taxes, he's going to lose $10,000 in purchases in his business. And to me, where I come from, that math just doesn't add up. But to the other two testifiers up there, I don't care which one wants to answer this. I have heard your cries about educating our children in this state. I have heard your concerns about we're not doing enough and there's this untrained workforce we have out there. So my question to either Ms. Larson or Mr. Hesse is, if you don't want to pay corporate income tax, you don't want to pay the statewide property tax, you don't want to pay the local property tax, how do you educate our children when nobody is paying taxes, particularly the biggest companies in the state of Minnesota? What's your answer to that?
Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chair, and Rukavina, I don't think we said we don't want to pay the corporate tax or local property taxes or...
Mr. Chair, you see it all the time. You come here, you complain about your local property taxes. Mr. Hesse said they were some of the highest in the nation. You complain. I've heard you come here and complain about the corporate taxes.
Absolutely.
And now today you're here today saying we don't want to pay the statewide property taxes. It's just levied on seasonal recreational property and businesses. So don't sit at the table and tell me you haven't come here and said that. Because you come here every time you come here, you say the exact same thing I just said. Who's left if you don't want to pay corporate income taxes, you don't want to pay local property taxes, and now you're testifying today you don't want to pay the statewide property tax, which totally funds education. Who in the hell is going to pay the taxes to educate our workforce, which I have heard both of you say, Mr. Hickey, I'm leaving you out of this. I'm not picking on you on this one. Which I've heard both of you say time after time, we need to educate those kids and train them for the jobs that are going to be opening up and the new jobs. Who's going to do that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I think what we've been coming here saying is that we want to make Minnesota a more competitive place for businesses to grow here, to add jobs here, and frankly, to retain jobs here. And if we're one of the highest taxed states in the country, let alone in the world, businesses aren't going to grow here. And if businesses don't grow here, there aren't employees here that pay income taxes, sales taxes, that help pay for education and public services. So, and our businesses contribute a lot to the state and to this community, not only in taxes, but in their foundations and charitable contributions. And so I think the businesses that I represent are contributing a lot to Minnesota. But if we aren't competitive, we're not going to keep jobs here. We're certainly not going to grow jobs here. And then there aren't going to be the employees here that pay a lot of the taxes. And so that's what we're saying, is we want to keep Minnesota as competitive as possible. This is a great state. It's got a great quality of life. But when businesses are looking about where to expand, they're also looking at the tax climate, the business climate, the cost of doing business. And so that's why we're here, trying to keep Minnesota competitive.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, and with this, Ms. Larson, I think your businesses and Mr. Hesse's businesses and even Mr. Hickey's businesses want an educated workforce and realize that that is the most important thing for them to make income and have a successful business, an educated workforce. And I just don't understand how time after time you ask for all of your taxes to be cut, and yet you demand from all of us legislators that we educate our kids, because you do that every time you come to the table, too.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Hesse?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, I think businesses are looking, as Ms. Larson said, for competitive taxes and value, and there's lots of places around the country and around the world that are providing a well-educated workforce for businesses at a much less tax price for business. So I think we have to look at competitiveness and keep that in mind, because there are businesses nowadays can locate all around the world and find an educated workforce. We need to make Minnesota competitive so that they look here as well.
Well,
Representative Rocavino.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to prolong this argument, but maybe, you know, move to Russia. They got a well-educated workforce. Pakistan, I heard, does, you know. I saw them burning things today on the news in Afghanistan. So, you know, I think we got a stable, well-educated workforce, and we certainly need your help, the help of all the business community, to continue to educate our kids so they can do a good job for you and you can make money.
Representative Groffalo, Chair Groffalo.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have to tell you, Representative Rukavina and Democrats, I really enjoy this fake populism coming from the Democrat Party today. You guys aren't interested in lowering property taxes. You're not interested in doing anything. You're interested in raising taxes. The fact of the matter is, when you were in charge of this place, your fake populism didn't sell. You raised taxes on the working class. You raised taxes, higher sales taxes, higher gas taxes. You even went out and you Representative Rukavina, and you raised taxes on those guys who, after they put in 10 hours in the mines, just want to go have a beer. You voted to raise their taxes. You're not going after corporations or big business. Democrats do the same thing they always do. They go after the middle class and sock it to them because that's where the money is. You don't want to lower property taxes. You want to stick it to the middle class like you always have, and that's why we're in charge of this place and you're not.
Mr. Chair, it's good to see a little passion out of my mellow.
You did say Rukavina to that point.
Mr. Chair, it's good to see a little passion out of Potts over there. You know, maybe he'll turn into a populist someday, but don't ever accuse me of raising property taxes because I fought for lower property taxes. Property taxes have escalated. And like I said last night at this table, have escalated for the last decade because we cut the wealthiest Minnesotans' income taxes. We had nothing to do with that. I didn't vote for Representative Abrams' bill that year. In 1 year, I actually did give him a vote because he took on Speaker Swigum, who was trying to do to the IRRB what you guys tried to do to the IRRB last year. It was the only reason I gave him a vote. We'll have more time for this discussion. But remember, I didn't support it, and you can ask Representative Lincheski half of the crap she had in her bill. I agree with you. I didn't want to raise booze taxes.
Half of the policy issues.
Yes, I didn't raise booze taxes. I didn't raise property taxes. I didn't want a sales tax on lawyers because I know who pay that. I don't like unfair taxes. I've consistently been a supporter of a fair income tax. And you know that, and everybody around here that's been here for years knows that. And if you recall 2 years ago, I had to change my vote because the tax bill went down. I don't know. I was trying to get home and get out of here at 9:30 at night on a Thursday night. And we all remember what happened. My dad, my passed away father, grabbed my finger and made me press the right button, which was the no button. And then I realized what I had done. And my father had guided me. And I had to make a decision to pass a bill, half of which was in there I didn't agree with. You're right. When you're in the majority, you got to do a lot of times things you don't necessarily agree with, but you got to lead. But don't sit across the table and preach to me about property taxes, because you look, there's one consistent factor in when property taxes escalated in Minnesota over the last decade, and it's been either Swigum or Pawlenty around to escalate them, whether they were speakers, majority leaders, or governors. That's when the property taxes went out of control in this state. A property tax is the worst tax there is, along with sales tax, and you guys have helped escalate them. I haven't.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and Representative,
and I always have passion when I talk, but I'm glad I'm rubbing off on you, Potts.
Maybe we could have Ms. Schill come up, and so it's a little quieter. No, not really. Chair Garofalo.
Well, thank you, but, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, you've made my point. When the Democrats are in charge and push comes to shove, what do? They stick it to the middle class. That's what they do. This is fake populism about having advocacy for the working man is a fraud. It's a myth. It's a legend. It's like the boogeyman or the tooth fairy. It doesn't exist. When you guys were in charge, who'd you stick it to? You stuck it to the middle class, and you can regret your vote, Representative Rukavina, but the facts are the facts. That's what the DFL party did to this state, and you did it too.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
Point, counterpoint. Representative Garofalo, there was a income tax increase in that bill that was vetoed by Tim Pawlenty, the guy that got beat by Michelle Bachmann, I might add. But anyway, that's a whole other issue. How's that work for him? But anyway, there was income tax increases in that bill, and they were vetoed by the governor. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, didn't we even try a veto override, or did we attempt it? I don't know if we did. But every Democrat but one voted for an income tax increase because it was the fairest tax on the wealthiest Minnesotans. They're the ones that have gotten the break on the federal level by George Bush. They're the ones that have gotten the break on the state level by Tim Pawlenty and Steve Swigum. And so don't blame us on that. And when we couldn't get any cooperation from Tim Pawlenty and Steve Swigum and who else, yeah, we had to throw up our hands, and we didn't cause a government shutdown. We rolled over, which embarrasses me. You guys caused the government shutdown because you at least had the guts not to roll over for what you believe in, but you purposely caused the government shutdown.
Mr. Chairman and Representative
Rucka.
Yeah, so Representative
Rucka.
So let's talk about this, okay? The fact of the matter is, when you were in charge of this place, 68 Democrats, not one single Republican, 68 Democrats stuck it to the middle class. You guys even went after the tax credit for organ donation. Organ donation. So what's your fair share argument there, Representative Rukavina? The people who are donating kidneys in the state aren't paying their fair share to the state of Minnesota? Where's the advocacy for the middle class there? When push came to shove, 68 Democrat green votes went up on the floor to stick it to the middle class. And if you guys get control of the House and Senate with this governor, Katie, bar the door. You are going to drive this state into the ground. It terrifies the businesses, the employers, and the employees of the state of Minnesota of what you guys would do with a blank check and no foot on the brake pedal.
Mr. Chair. We could take this outside, and I don't mean way the heck outside in a brawl. I mean just to get out of the room. But I'm more than willing, a little guy, to take you on anyhow. But aside from that, no. Again, back to what we did. An income tax, which is the fairest tax. You guys stick it to people that don't have the wherewithal to pay their property taxes. You keep raising them and raising them. Now you're taking the renter's credit away from them. The next it'll be the circuit breaker credit being taken away from them. No. You stick it to the middle class, and we can see the bills around here this year trying to undo unions, trying to take away the middle class. You know, the last time we had a Great Depression in this country, 1% of the richest people controlled 24% of the wealth. And when unions came in under my hero FDR, it got up to 1% of the richest controlling only 10% of the wealth, because unions helped everybody in this room, everybody at this table. Representative Downey's father is a union teacher. His best buddy, Willard Eichler, from the Iron Range, from Eveleth, Minnesota, who was their great hockey coach for years, and by the way, used to steal some of our kids to come down and play in Edina because he didn't have enough good kids to play hockey. But anyway, all good union people. That's how you got here, because your dad was a union. That's how you got here, because your parents are Democrats, and they still love you, but they're ashamed of your politics. But anyway, and I can go all the way down the aisle here. And you're trying to undo that? You're trying to turn us back to 100 years ago where we're going to, 20 years from now, we're going to have to fight for pensions and health insurance and a 8-hour workday and everything else? No, don't you lecture me, young man, about what the hell's going on around here.
Okay, does anybody have any comments on House Bill 2337?
There's good parts in the bill.
Representative Grotwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the conversation.
Good. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the history lessons, and I think history, you know, should be brought into the picture here today with respect to what's been happening in property taxes. So the effective statewide property tax increases in 2008 and 2009, members, were actually larger than the property tax increases in 2012. So I think it's kind of an interesting object lesson. You know, interesting who was in charge and so on back in those years. We've been through a tough decade, and so we've all kind of had to weather this. But I don't think we should be sitting here necessarily defending what's happening at local government spending. I mean, you sit here and say, you know, they shouldn't be held responsible, and of course that's quite ridiculous. But I'll just point out, $379 million sounds like a lot in effective new taxes, but that was superseded by what happened in 2008 and 2009.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Representative Gottwald.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm going to try to keep it to where we were at with the testimony, and there's a lot of things I could say to what Representative Rukavina threw out, but we do have choices here. We talked about this last night, members. Choices. Do we want to grow government and grow taxation and grow government burden? Representative Marquardt, in your family budget or business budget, would the model work if you increased your expenses or expenditures, planned expenditures, twice as much as your revenue, twice as fast as your economy? That's what we've been doing here in Minnesota for the last several decades, growing our government twice as fast as government. And just to talk about those doggone filthy, wealthy people who don't pay enough income tax, Representative Rukavina, the top 20%, this is the Minnesota Tax Incidence Study, okay, our own state, the top 20% on income tax, they pay 60%, more than 60% of all the income taxes, more than 50% of all taxes in the state of Minnesota. So they're not asking for no taxes, Representative Rukavina, and it's not that they're not putting in their fair share. You know that term, fair share. It's not that they're not putting in their fair share towards education and all those other things that we love in Minnesota. They're doing their fair share and then some. The bottom 20% are paying no income taxes, and they receive millions in refundable credits. Now, I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong, but let's be accurate about what the tax burden is like here in this state. And when our business people come here looking for a little relief so they can create a few decent jobs so people don't have to come running to the state of Minnesota for another public program and another handout, this is the kind of garbage they get. These are the geese that lay the golden eggs, folks. The employers in Minnesota, the small businesses, by the way, who all qualify to be the so-called filthy wealthy, the 250,000 plus a year, the people who file on their individual income tax returns, who create the businesses. They got dirt under their fingernails, hard hats on their heads. They're employing more people. Mr. Hickey up here could tell you. It's the small businesses that create over 80% of the new jobs we want in Minnesota. But when we try to make some choices here about jobs and growing our economy versus growing taxes, growing dependency, growing government, this is the kind of argument we get, that they're not paying their fair share and that they want stuff they're not willing to pay for. Well, there are the facts. Top 20% paying over 60% of all income taxes, more than half of all the taxes in the state of Minnesota. The bottom 20% paying no income taxes, receiving millions in refundable credits. It's out of our own Minnesota Tax Incidence Study. Read it. I mean, let's start talking facts here, folks. What we need to do is get off the backs of our employers, out of their back pockets, let them grow sustainable jobs, and get Minnesotans out of government dependency. That's what they want.
Thank you, Representative Gottwald. Representative Portman.
Mr. Chair, I kind of had a question for you. I could be misremembering the facts. I don't have the world's greatest memory. But when we were in charge in the legislature and Governor Pawlenty was the governor, we knew there were certain things he just wouldn't sign. But we sent him anyway, right? We went through the exercise of fighting the good fight. But then we got to real work. And I was just wondering, this is the second, at least the second full day that we've had this bill, we're not moving it. I was just wondering if there's a point in time where this committee starts to look at the things where we might have common ground and where we might actually be able to get things done, or if we're going to keep doing sort of what we always lovingly refer to as our fake bills.
Well, thank you, Mr. Department, but I don't consider this as a fake bill. This is a bill that we've spent a lot of time on. But I would say that hopefully we can wrap this up by Thursday and let the process work, and we'll see where it goes.
Mr. Chair.
I do not consider this bill a fake bill.
What do you think the chances are of Governor Dayton signing a bill that raises taxes on poor people to give a tax cut to corporations? What are the odds?
Well, we'll see if he can warm up to it a bit.
I just, you know, there's a lot of people who expect that when we come here, we're actually going to do two things, a little bit of politics and then a little bit of real policy work. And I think we're kind of getting a little off balance and a little too much, you know, hot air and a little too light on the actual real work that might actually become law and change people's lives.
Well, this situation's fluid. We'll work through it.
Mr. Chair, to that point?
No, Representative Anderson. Nobody mentioned your name. And that's kind of the clue here. If you mention somebody's name, you have to go to them. But whatever. Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, this has been an interesting conversation so far this morning. And, you know, some members have talked about going back 100 years ago. But I kind of feel that some members in this committee are still living in the 1970s. And quite honestly, we can't afford to live in that world of the 1970s style of life and on government spending freewheeling. When you look at Minnesota right now, we are at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to our business climate. We are ranked 45th. 45th.
By who?
And these folks came here today to say, hey, you know what? We want to create jobs here in Minnesota. We want to stay here in Minnesota. And we're saying no. You know, it wasn't that long ago when the Democrats controlled the House. They inherited a surplus. And within 1 year, that surplus went to a deficit. In 1 year's time. And we saw businesses leaving the state. I had a business in my own community that came to me and said, help me out. We want to stay here. We're a startup company. You know, it was biotechnology stuff that we're talking about. And you know what their competitor was? Michigan. Michigan was wooing them. I contacted the Department of Economic and Employment Development, and I said, help me out. Help me keep these folks here, because they're going to provide good-paying jobs in the state of Minnesota. Government doesn't create jobs. Businesses create jobs, and they were willing to do it here. But you know what? We did not have the climate to keep them here. Instead, in 1 month's time, those folks were gone. And what we're trying to do here today is put a little money towards R&D development, to put some money towards the angel investor tax credit, so we can provide good-paying jobs so that we have more consumers within this state. What I saw under your leadership, surplus to deficit, I saw property tax increases of 7.8%. $524 million under your leadership. I think we have a huge opportunity here. I think this is a great step towards making a better environment from our state. Obviously, we have seen within one, even 6 months' time, we are now with a surplus. We went from a $6.2 billion budget deficit, and now we're at a $1.2 billion surplus. I think we are trying to send the message to the businesses here that we want them to stay, that we want their jobs here, and that we value them as a part of our community. And I think this is a good step, and I thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. On that note, I do have Carlson, Marquardt, Downey, Knuth, and Rukavina. With that, members, we'll meet tomorrow at 10:15. We have a floor session at noon, so we're going to shut it down here a little sooner than I'd like. Room 200, continuation of House File 2337 is amended. We could be taking votes on amendments. We will take more testimony from folks with concerns and in support of the bill tomorrow, and hopefully we can get it wrapped up by Thursday and get on with it. With that, good government all the time. Oh, leave all your handouts and your folders. I'm going to start with this list tomorrow that I have here. Please leave your handouts in the folder. We will be referring to them. Good government all the time. We're adjourned.